You are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
This is Remy Warren.
I am Rihanna Carey.
My name is Adam Foss.
This is Paul Tedford, professional archer.
Hey everyone, I'm Christy Titus, and you are listening to Archery Maniacs.
We cover everything archery, from the hunting side to the tournament side, with stories, tips and tactics, gear reviews, and more.
That helped my tuning game so much when I made sure that all my arrows were square.
And I'm just staring into his eyes. Blood's dripping off of its tines. Mud is everywhere.
The clarity these mavens offer is amazing.
I'm just like Spider-Man, you know, on this rock. You know, just laying there.
Belly crawling in there, and I can barely fit in there, and I can hear the cat growling at me.
So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant.
In this episode, our co-host Cale Staten interviews myself, and we cover everything about hunting out west, things you need to take, things you don't need to take, and how to make the trip as affordable as possible. I hope you enjoy the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, today we have kind of a cool episode. We have our new co-host, Cale Staten, on the other end of the line. He is actually looking at coming, he's from Texas, and he's looking at coming and hunting either Wyoming or Colorado or something like that. And, I've just been trying to help him out best I can. And he thought it would be a really beneficial idea as far as a podcast goes to do a podcast of him interviewing me, basically helping him figure out which units to apply for and when to apply and how to apply and how to do the research and what kind of gear and all that kind of stuff. So, Cale is actually going to interview me in this podcast.
Turn it around on you today.
What's up? What's up?
So, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm good. If there is any background noise, everyone, I excuse it. We're working on getting new internet at the house, and it's not there yet. So I am sitting in Starbucks right now. So
that's great.
So, yeah.
All right. Well. You know, everybody that the first time to go hunt out west is kind of intimidating. At least it was for me, especially for somebody that doesn't live in that area. I'm from Texas, and, you know, the hunting is completely different, and the way to get out there to get hunting is completely different. And like you said, you know, it's been a process. I've made one trip out west before, but it was a guided hunt, so I really just had to do it. I was told. So this time is going to be completely different. I know I am going to be going with you, but still I'm trying to get to the point where I can go out on my own at some point and things like that. So, you know, I think the listeners, a lot of them are going to be in the position of me. So basically, you know, when you're choosing to go west, you know, what would you start as a big game animal? What may be first animal to go try to be successful on out west?
So if you aren't, you know, if you're not absolutely dead set on coming for an elk hunt or dead set on coming for a mule deer hunt, if you simply just want to get out west and shoot an animal, then I would definitely apply for an antelope license. Wyoming, places that I live, I literally see over 300 antelope a day. I mean, the chances of you coming out here with your bow and trying to shoot an antelope are great. And if something happens and you don't get an antelope, you can shoot one with a rifle. So that's a guarantee with a rifle, let me tell you what. So that's what I would do. I like to say, if you're not dead set on something else, because I understand the allure of hunting high country mule deer, hunting, you know, screaming elk in September. I completely get that. But if you simply just want to come out west and hunt something, then I would hunt an antelope if I was, you know, someone that just wants to go hunting.
No, that makes sense. You get your feet wet, start learning the area, learn the tag system, the draw system, you know, just get some experience out there with the boots on the ground. That'd be a good way to do it. I agree.
Yeah, boots on the ground is probably the biggest thing that'll make your trip better. Is having boots on the ground prior to just going on your hunt.
So, the other thing I struggled with too is, you know, I archery hunt, but, you know, should I go with a bow or should I go with a gun? You know, and, my first hunt was a rifle hunt. But, you know, I like to kill stuff. So sometimes I'm not picky. You know, I really, really want to kill an elk with my bow. But, you know, if for a first trip out there, what would you recommend doing with that? So how would you make that decision?
So once again, elk is the only animal in Wyoming that you can't come and hunt with your bow and then it immediately open with rifle and hunt with your rifle. There's a few units in Wyoming that are like that, but there's like one or two, you know, very, very few. Most of the elk licenses, the archery season is in September, and then the rifle season starts October 15th. So you have that three-week gap, basically, 15-day gap, that you couldn't hunt anything, no matter what. Some, like, cow season might be open or something like that. But now deer and antelope are different. Most deer rifle seasons open October 1st. So you could come and you could hunt, say, the last 4 days of bow season, you know, say September 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, and then you could stay for three more days or something like that and be able to hunt those days with your rifle. Same with antelope. You could come, and some antelope seasons in middle of September. So you could bow hunt the last couple days of antelope season, and then rifle season, the last day of archer season is over, the very next day is rifle opener. So with antelope and deer, you could come and you could literally hunt both. You know, Wyoming isn't a state that you have to choose a weapon unless you get a type 9. Type 9 is archery only, and it's only valid during archery season. So you couldn't, you know, Wyoming also, you can hunt with a bow during rifle season. You just have to wear orange. But if you get a type 9, it is only during archery season. You couldn't go even during rifle season with your bow. It's only during archery season. So that's what I would do. You know, if you're going to come deer or antelope, spending $400 or $500 on a tag, you're like, man, I want to come back with an animal. So, you know, if you are set on bow hunting, awesome. Go bow hunt, you know, the last 3 or 4 days of the season, and then it's going to be rifle season. And you can tip over into rifle season. And if you haven't shot an animal with your bow and you really want to shoot something with your rifle, then you're legal.
That's awesome. I mean, that's something I don't think people have considered or I didn't consider.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great option for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess this next question kind of depends on where you live and how you're wanting to get there because, you know, when I was deciding which state to hunt, I went with New Mexico because it was within a reasonable amount of driving distance from my house. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to fly. I like to have my truck there. So other than driving distance, you know, how would you go about choosing which state to hunt?
So I would first off see which animal that you want to hunt the most, you know, whether it's elk, deer, antelope. Those are kind of the big three that everyone comes out west to hunt. Once you figure that out, then I would start looking at drawing odds. You know, there's several states. So if you want to hunt an elk, for instance, there's several states. You just go buy one over the counter. You know, Colorado and Idaho, you just go buy an elk tag over the counter. You're guaranteed to go hunt. You don't have to worry about drawing. You don't have to worry about it. You just decide you're going to go, buy your tag, pick the dates, and go. And that's a big deal, you know, because not knowing whether you're going to draw or not is a real pain in the ass. Same with deer. You know, there's several states that you wouldn't really think of hunting mule deer, but you can buy them basically over the counter, or if you apply, it's 100% draw. So like South Dakota, North Dakota, archery. This is archery. Nebraska, you just buy a tag over the counter. Nebraska's pretty cool. You can hunt with a bow the entire state of Nebraska with a bow from September 1st to December 31st.
Oh, wow.
So that's awesome because, you know, if you have a month where you don't have any hunting going on in your own state, well, then you can count on Nebraska. But I would definitely start with the animal you want to hunt. And then I would start because for whatever reason, certain states really appeal to certain people. then I would start looking at the states that appeal to you, but also offer really good draw odds. Because if you can't draw it, you can't go hunting anyways.
Right. Right. So that makes sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, think about it. Like, everybody and their dog would like to hunt the Arizona Strip, but with, like, a 0.001% draw odds, it is literally less than once-in-a-lifetime draw odds. Like, I mean, you could have max points and still not draw it your whole life.
Hold on. Right. We're having a little bit of connectivity issues right now. You're cutting out just a little bit. Oh, now you're back.
Am I back
now? Yeah. So, you know, the big thing too, when trying to, if you're depending on a draw, you know, if you haven't been elk hunting before or big game hunting out west, you probably don't have all the gear you need. So it's kind of hard to start, force yourself to start buying gear throughout the year. What kind of gear if you don't know if you're actually going to go hunt? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of hard to start planning all that. And for a lot of people, you can't just go out and drop, you know, several thousand dollars on gear with the possibility of going on a hunt or at one time. So for myself, I'm spacing it out. You know, I just ordered my pack, you know, I've got camo, you know, things like that. You know, a lot of stuff I already have, but some of the things I don't, I'm spacing it out throughout the year. So I'm not having to drop all that money all at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge deterrent. And that's a big topic in itself. People are like, well, if I go hunt out west, I have to get all this gear, and you don't. You know, it's a common misconception. You're just going to you can wear the exact same camo that you have for hunting out west or out east, but you're just not going to wear like your super heavy stuff, you know? So if you have, you know, a thinner style of pants, cool, bring that. If you have like a sweatshirt, cool, bring that. But your super heavy coat or your coveralls, you're not going to need those when you're hiking up and down in the west. You're not going to need that kind of stuff. So so don't fall into the trap that people are telling you that you have to go out and buy Sitka gear to hunt the west. You have to go out and buy a super expensive tent and a super expensive sleeping bag and sleeping pad and better shoes and better backpack and all this stuff. You don't have to do all that. You know, if you have a frame pack, I went on a bunch of backpacking trips with a frame pack that cost $80.
Yep.
And yep. I packed out an entire half of an elk on one of those. Like, it was miserable because it was so much weight, but the frame pack held up great. Was comfortable, it held up great, everything. So you don't have to go out and spend all the money. In fact, I would recommend not doing that, because if you go out there, hunting out west isn't for everyone. Like, that's cool. If it's not for you, it's not for you. That's just fine. But don't go out and spend all the money until you've gone once or twice and really have realized if you like it and want to continue doing it. Then go out and do just like you're talking, you know, maybe 1 year spend some money on a pack. And the next year get a sleeping bag, a good backpacking one, and a good backpacking sleeping pad, you know. But the idea and thought of going out and spending all that money at once it scares people.
Yeah, it's the technical hunting gear that you need that you want or you think you need out west is expensive. It is. A sleeping bag, I guess I'm looking $300 to $600.
Yep.
For a good sleeping bag, you know, so that's a lot of money, but it is an investment.
Yeah, and for everyone that's listening, though, don't be afraid to reach out to myself or reach out to Kale. Kale is learning a bunch from me, and he already knew a bunch, but if he can't answer it or I can't answer it, I know a ton of people that can answer it. So before you go and buy something that you think, keyword think, you need, shoot us a message and we might be able to help you realize that you don't need it and save you $500 that you could put towards the gas to get to your hunt.
Right. For sure. Yep. So that's awesome. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So you picked your state, you picked your animal. How do you know when to apply?
So in every state, it's obviously different. It would be really awesome if all the states would collaborate and they would say the first Tuesday in April is the closing of every single state that you're going to apply for. Like, that would be awesome, but they don't do that. So, and whatever you do, don't go off of the previous year's close date, because like Colorado, for instance, it is the first Tuesday in April. And obviously that date changes compared to the year before. I personally went off last year when I was getting ready to apply for hunting in 2017. I went off previous year dates, and I missed out on several states by one day. So I would recommend either A, getting on their website. I don't like doing that because I think all game and fish websites are extremely poorly built, and they are super difficult to navigate. Unless you are a resident of that state and you're used to looking at it every single year, they are extremely difficult to navigate. And I don't know why they make it so hard, but they do. So I just pick up the phone. I have Colorado, Utah, Idaho, Nevada, Montana, Wyoming, New Mexico. I have all of the game and fish offices saved in my phone. Pick up the phone and I say, hey, when is your guys' draw deadline? And then I write it down. And then I apply.
There you go. I tell you that when you make that phone call, don't be scared, because they're very nice people. Every time I've called, talk to somebody, they've been extremely helpful and nice.
Oh, you cut out there. What did you say?
I said, you know, don't be afraid to make this phone call either, because every time I've called one of these states and talk to the Game and Fish Department, they've been extremely helpful and nice. That not one time have I had anybody make me feel like I asked a stupid question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're there to help. Like, they are. They really are.
They are, and they care, because that's their job. But, you know, a lot of times in customer service, you call somewhere for in other industries, and you get somebody on the phone that does not want to talk to you, and they make you feel like an idiot. But that's not been my experience calling the Game and Fish at any time I've ever needed something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So. And maybe this next question, I'm thinking too much into things. Maybe I'm not, but you know, a rookie hunter out west, especially if you're going without a guide, you know, weather could be a make or break for you. Mm-hmm. It could be plumb dangerous and deadly. So, you know, a rookie hunter, Would it be something that you need to consider when you're putting in for the applications, whether I go early season, mid season, late season? You know, do I try to avoid? I know in mountain states, you know, it can get snow in September, where we don't even get snow in January in Texas. So, I mean, is something that we even consider, you know, when putting in?
So it depends on, once again, what kind of gear you currently have. You know, I'm not saying go out and buy the top-of-the-line rain gear, but if you already have good rain gear, that obviously opens up your options for hunting. Now, just like you mentioned, I hunted in 2016 and 2017, and both times we woke up, and the one year I woke up and there was probably 14 inches of snow, and this is in September, and last year, we were walking into where we were going to hunt, and it was snowing like crazy, and it was barely above freezing. I mean, it was cold, cold. So hunting out west, especially elk or mule deer hunting high country, it can be anything. And you can't, you know, you can't go sooner so that it's warmer. You just can't. The season's not open. So it would be better to just prepare for it. And by preparing, I mean, have a good to decent rain set, so rain pants and rain top. I would have some type of gaiters in your pack. Now, gaiters come in all expenses, so you can go out, if you know, like me, I know I'm going to use them every single year, so I got expensive ones. But if you're going once a year and not hunting in it all year like I do, you can get a set of good gaiters for $30 to $50. I mean, you don't have to go and blow a ton of money on it. Same with rain gear. You can get good sets of rain gear. You just want a good enough set so that if you're walking with it on, it doesn't like completely rip and tear, and then you don't have a rain set anymore.
Right. And
then as far as, you know, out west, you dress in layers, so then you would want some sort of insulation layer, whether it's a good sweatshirt or some sort of, like, down. You know, there's a ton of companies out there that make great down jackets. You don't have to buy a Sitka one. For, you know, I have one because I use it, you know, basically from September all the way until January, I'm using it. So I want something that I know will last. But for once again, if you're going once a year, you don't have to have something that is made to last you to use it every single day.
I didn't think you could even kill an elk without wearing Sitka gear.
You know, it would probably there's a lot of people out there that don't think you could kill an elk without either wearing Sitka gear, Kuyu, First Light, you know, there's – and I've killed a lot of elk in blue jeans.
I'm sure a lot of elk have been killed in blue jeans.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I guess, you know, the point is you can go to somewhere like Walmart and get a nice synthetic down type puffy jacket for probably $75 to $110, and it'll be light enough and crunch down small enough, and you can use that until it dies. And then when it dies, if you still like it, want to keep going backcountry bow hunting, then you know you can spend a little bit more money on it. You know, but I would definitely we actually have a gear list online on our website. It's free. Go check it out. It's like 52 points of gear and 12 to 14 day extended nutrition list for in the backcountry. It'd be super helpful for people that are really interested in looking and going there and hunting out west. But I would definitely prepare for it rather than trying to hope around it.
Right. Right. No, that makes a lot more sense than the way I was approaching it in the beginning. You know, that's a much better way to plan for something. You know, early in this question, you were saying how you don't need the coveralls and stuff. Tell you a little funny story about me with my first elk hunt. I'm a whitetail hunter. Wake up the first morning, and it's 15 degrees outside. So what did I do? I put every piece of clothes I brought on, everything. Because I woke up freezing cold in my sleeping bag that I bought from Walmart that morning. And so we get 200 yards, maybe 300 yards from the tent. And I'm huffing and puffing because we had to go straight up this mountain. And I had to tell the guy to stop. And he's like, what is going on? It's pitch black outside. We're trying to get to the place we spotted the elk the evening before. And I was like, I've got to take some clothes off. So I ended up taking half my clothes off and leaving it right there under a tree, marked it so I knew where to find it on the hike back. He was laughing at me. So it was something funny I did, but I learned real quick I don't need to dress like that when I'm hiking and moving in those mountains, even if it's 15 degrees outside.
Yeah. It's just a whole different mindset. I mean, it's a whole different mindset, like you're saying, because and now there's times when you're going to have everything in your pack on and you're going to be cold out there, but sitting down and putting everything you have on and then getting cold is better than trying to walk with too much stuff on and getting sweaty. Because once you get sweaty, your base layer's wet, and then it's hard to even get warm after that.
Right. That makes sense. All right. So we've figured out where we're applying, which state, which animal, what time of the year. We get drawn. Oh, my God. Now what do we do?
all hell is broken loose. You are drawn.
Now we've got 2 months to get ready. What the hell do we do?
You take the backpack that you currently have and put 40 to 80 pounds on it. And spend the next 2 months with that on your back walking around in circles. that will prepare you better than anything else that you're going to do. But no, seriously, I would, if you have a decent pack, I would put 40 to 80 pounds in it and 3 times a week, just walk. Even if it's on level ground, that's going to get your entire body used to having that kind of weight. You know, the pressure on your shoulders and the pressure on your spine and the pressure on your hips, and it'll help you get your backpack adjusted correctly and all kinds of stuff. Like, that will be super beneficial to anyone that has never packed weight with a backpack. And then practice shooting with 40 pounds. Your backpack for a 3 to 6 day hunt going in will probably be 40 to 60 pounds. It could be lighter. It could be more. It just depends on how good you are at packing, obviously. But put 40, 50 pounds in your backpack and stand out there at 20 to 80 yards or whatever you're comfortable shooting and practice, because it feels completely different shooting with weight in your backpack than it does shooting without it. And out west, you want to extend your range. So if right now your range is 50, go shoot at 60 and just see how you do. It's more of a mental thing than it is an actual performance thing. Like, mentally, you're telling yourself that you can't shoot any farther than 50 when, until you get out to 80, 90, 100 yards, it's not, 50 and 60 isn't that much difference. You know, it really isn't. You just have to go shoot it. You know, put your target out there, walk back to 60, and shoot it.
It is fun shooting far distances
with
bows.
It really is. It's fun.
I don't think 60 is far enough. I mean, honestly.
No, but what I'm saying is...
No, I know what you're saying. To start at 60, but...
And then go 70.
Put it at 100. It's fun. Just see what you can do. Put a big block target out there. Maybe put a backstop so you don't lose your arrow. Shoot at 100. It is fun. Yeah. And then when you shoot at 60, after you shot at 100, it's going to be a chip shot.
Yeah, it's like night and day difference.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So it's fun to shoot far distances. And
it
so
is.
It'd be fun practice. And it's a tremendous help, like you said. So you have to practice farther distances.
Yeah,
with broadheads.
With broadheads, exactly. Because, you know, the success bar, if your maximum range is, let's say, 40 yards, the success bar, if your maximum range is 60 yards, is probably, you're probably going to be 30 to 45% more likely to have success if you can shoot that 20 yards farther with your broadheads. Like, it's insane. I mean, out west is just, it's insane. You know, being able to shoot a little bit farther like that. And it's all, like we're saying, it's fun. It's all mental. You literally just put the target out there and just start flinging arrows and put something behind it so you're not afraid to break your arrows or lose your arrows, and just shoot. Go shoot. Have fun. So that'll help you. Looking up stuff that, you know, that will help with nutrition. Because nobody wants to go on a backpack trip and get hungry or be hungry. So that's a big deal right there. So we have a nutrition guide. I have a bunch of podcasts about nutrition. There's a lot of other things out there. Like, Cameron Haynes has a bow hunting book that talks about his nutrition in the backcountry. Ryan Lampers with Hunt Harvest Health, their podcast, they cover some good nutrition stuff. So there's a lot of people out there talking a lot about nutrition. You can buy Mountain House meals. You can dehydrate your own meals. There's a ton of avenues out there, but you can take way, way too much food. But it's even worse when you don't take enough food, because you're spending all this money and effort and time to go on this hunt. If you don't have enough food to even keep you energized on the hunt, you're not going to hunt your true potential, and you might as well not even have gone.
So, you're not going to enjoy it.
Exactly. You're just going to be miserable the whole time until you shoot the first thing that comes by so you can eat it.
Elk backstraps over an open fire are pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I've experienced that once.
Right?
So.
Right? Yeah. We did the same thing one time. We shot this elk down in this hellhole, like, too many miles from the truck in the middle of, like, 2.5 foot snow. And we just started eating it before we packed it out. It's like, the less we have to pack on our backs, the better. And then being in,
I really don't care what anyone says
about physical conditioning. Hunting out west is always going to be more fun if you're in better shape. There's no way around it. You know, there just isn't. You know, the elevation is higher than most likely where you live. So everything. So there's actually a company that makes an elevation mask, and you can put on this elevation mask, and it's got different cartridges for different elevations. And what that does is it basically simulates the thin air and it being difficult to breathe when you're at the elevation that you're going to be hunting. So, you know, something like that could be very helpful. Learning.
They're not expensive.
No,
they're not expensive. I looked them up. They're $15 to $20, I think. I mean, around that price. I mean, they're not expensive.
Nope, they're not. And then learning how to bone out an animal would be huge. Most states, you just need to call your game warden. And that's why we put together a booklet that has all these questions lined out to help people so that when they call up the game warden, they actually know what the hell to ask them. And it just helps you plan your hunt from A all the way to the following year because it helps you record it so that the next year if you go hunt there again, you're that much farther ahead. It's going to be a super, super helpful tool. Everybody, just check it out at our website. It's under eBooks. It's going to be like $3 to $5 or $10 or so. It's going to be super cheap. But you just call up Game Warden, ask him, hey, what cuts of meat are required to take, and are you allowed to bone the animal out? Chances are they're going to tell you something like both hinds, both fronts, both back straps, both tenderloins, and you're good to go. So learning how to bone out an animal is going to save you a ton of weight because you don't need to pack out the bones anyways. Why the hell would you do that?
Right.
So learning that would be super helpful. And then just doing the actual research on the unit that you're going to be hunting is a must. Learning where you're going to park your truck, where you're going to walk, where the vantage points are, so that you can glass from those. And now, again, this is all outlined in our book that can help you walk through that step by step so you don't miss something and get on your hunt and be like, son of a bitch, I don't know where the highest point is. I mean, I can see up there. That looks like a high point, but what if I get there and I can't see what I need to see? So our book is going to walk you through all that. So doing the research, you know, figuring out vantage points, places that you want to camp, places that are at obvious water, places that are parking spots for a bunch of other people that you want to stay away from. You know, there's just a ton of research that you can do in that time, along with packing a pack, learning how to bone out an animal, learning nutrition, and shooting farther distances than you ever shot in your life. You know, and obviously when we say shoot at 100, 120 yards at the target, we're not saying shoot an animal that far. Don't be dumb.
Right, you know? Right.
But put your broadheads on and see what they do at that distance and get comfortable because I guarantee you if you can hit the target at 100, when you walk back up to 60 and 70, the target's going to look huge. So do that kind of stuff. So that's a bunch of stuff that you can do kind of in the meantime after you've drawn your tag.
Right. That makes sense. Where the hell do I hunt? How do I find that out? You know, I've got this giant unit, you know, many, many miles that I'm able to hunt. Where do I start?
Yeah, so once again, our book has a ton of – and our book is – the questions are broke down into these specific categories. So one of the question categories is, I drew this unit. Here's the question specific to this unit. So – once again, you would call up the game warden or preferably the game biologist and say, sir, ma'am, I have this unit. And then you would just start, you know, I would recommend calling them up and say, hey, look, you know, I know that your time is valuable. This is the unit that I drew, and I have a few units or a few questions trying to narrow down where I should actually hunt in this unit. Do you mind if I ask you a few of those questions? They're going to say no. Go ahead and ask, you know. So. Then you just go through the list that we have. Obviously, before you call them, cross off the questions that do not apply to you. You know, if you're hunting mule deer in September, you're not going to ask them what time, you know, what elevation the elk like to rut. Like, that does not apply to you, so don't waste their time. Don't waste your time either. So you'll ask them these questions. You know, a good one for mule deer is what elevations do the mature mule deer most likely frequent? Are there any burns in the area from recent years that I can focus my attention on that animals are most likely to be at? And obviously there's other helpful tools to help you even figure out which unit to even apply for. So like Go Hunt, Eastman's Members Research Only, All of those kind of help you narrow down which one to apply for. And then once you apply, forums like Rockslide and things like that are very helpful to figure out where to hunt within the unit, as well as calling the game biologist and asking a ton of questions. Like I said, all the questions are lined out in the book that we have on our website. It's under eBooks as well, Hunt Guide Planner, something like that. And yeah, so you just call and ask them. Don't say, hey, could you tell me where to hunt? Because they get that all the time,
right?
You know. But if you ask them, you know, are there any major trails cutting through this unit that I should stay away from? Okay, cool. Yeah, this guy's serious about hunting. Yeah, these trails. Are there any, you know, are there any major cities within the unit that I should try and stay away from? Are there any major campgrounds? You know, there's a bunch of questions, once again, all lined out in the book, that you ask them that keeps you away from saying, can you tell me where to hunt, please?
Can you tell me exactly where a 350-inch bull is?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Do you have the GPS coordinates of that deer that you saw last year? Because I would appreciate if you would give those to me. They don't like that.
Go call and ask where Zach hunts. They'll know.
Yeah, they probably will.
Do you know where Zach Harold hunts? I want to go there.
I have actually had all of my game wardens and game biologists sign a non-disclosure agreement. So no, I'm kidding.
Right.
So none of you are going to hear anything. So that's what I would do.
No, that's a good start. You know, I'll tell you kind of how I figured out what units to apply for. You know, when I went to New Mexico, I didn't use any of the services. I just got on the website and I just started clicking stuff and trying to see how the website worked first of all and try to figure it out. And I'm no computer guy. So I figured out where it showed me how many tags were available, how many people applied for those tags, and then success rate. And I just started writing down units, you know, that say there was 400 tags and, you know, 2,000 people applied and, you know, the success rate was 6%, you know. And so I started doing that, and it took me some time, several evenings on the computer for an hour or so at a time. And then I kind of narrowed my choices down you know, which units had higher success rate on the draw and then higher success rate of success on there. And then I put in for, and in New Mexico, you put in for the weapon you want to use. So I put in for a rifle tag, a muzzleloader tag, and an archery tag. And I ended up drawing my first year. And I'm not saying that anything that I did made me more successful in the draw. Maybe I just got lucky as hell, but me and my dad put in one time and we both got drawn the same year. So, and we were able to go on a rifle hunt and, he was successful and I missed. So, so we were almost 100%.
So that's a huge thing right there. Like every website has draw statistics and draw odds and success rates, yep. Like almost every single one, yep, out there. Now Eastman's kind of compiles all that, so you can just look in there, or you can order their members research book, and it has all their member research sections compiled into one book for each state, and it's broken down into each state. You can just order that book specifically, and you don't have to order the magazines if you don't want. That's super helpful, but one thing that can help, like the way that you did it, is a great way to do it. One thing that can make that even quicker is if you pull up the unit, all the map of all the units, and then go in there and cross off all the units that are right next to giant populations.
Because okay.
Giant populations automatically mean chances are more people, because they can wake up in the morning. Rather than having to wake up at 4 in the morning to drive to their unit, they can wake up at 6. They can be there in 10 minutes. So anytime there's a unit that has a really big city next to it, chances are the pressure is going to be a lot higher. So if you get on there and you look at just your unit map, and you cross off all the units that are right around a really big city, that can, and then start looking at units that are areas you would like to hunt, then you might have 10 or 15 units. And when you have 10 or 15 units, you can just go directly to your statistics page and just look for those 10 or 15 units. And then you can do all of that in about an hour as opposed to spending several nights.
Right. Well, that makes sense. That complete sense.
Yeah.
So,
but no, like you took initiative, though. Most people, they look at those statistics and they get overwhelmed and they don't even do anything. So
right.
You did awesome. And clearly it worked. You guys got your tags.
We got lucky, I guess, or did something right.
Oh, no, you
right,
got
so.
It, man. You did it. You did awesome.
And my dad killed a bull over 300 inches on the first day, so that was a success. You know, it wasn't a giant, but it was a nice representative 6x6 for sure.
Man,
never passed him.
Anytime hunting with your dad is worth it. It don't matter if you kill anything at all. Anytime hunting with your dad is worth it.
That's for sure. For sure. So, what are some things you cannot live without in your pack that you absolutely must have for sure?
So, I would never go anywhere without a good sleeping pad. You have got to have some sort of water purification, water filtration, something. That's a must. You can't just go up there and hope that you don't get thirsty. That doesn't work. You have got to have a good sleeping bag. You don't need a top-of-the-line tent. Just be smart with where you set your tent. You know, don't go set your tent, your Walmart tent, in a wind tunnel. It will break it. Obviously, you know, if you have a cheaper tent, be smarter with where you set it, and everything will be just fine. So there's that. You're going to need a good pack, and I know that's not gear in your pack, but you're going to definitely need a good pack. You are going to need a kill kit, and what I mean by kill kit is you need basically a pack that has your knife. I take a small saw. And then, game bags. You definitely need game bags. You're going to obviously need some sort of survival kit. And I actually put my survival kit inside of my bino harness because my binos go with me everywhere. You know, if I'm on a stalk, I may set down my pack, but my binos go everywhere. So in the survival
kit. And you can lose your pack.
Yeah. That's happened
to
me before.
You set it down, go on a stalk, turn around.
And you're like,
you're
what?
400 or 500 yards away. So that's a very big deal. That's a great point on the survival kit.
Yeah. So I have, you know, like a space blanket, ways to start a fire, some small water purification tablets in there, a type of headlamp, and that's what's in my little survival. So that's a must. And then obviously you need some sort of food. And then you need some sort of way to cook the food, whether that is a small stove and a pot set, or whether that's a jet boil, or whether you just want to bring a pot and light a fire every day. I wouldn't recommend that. But if you really wanted to, you could light a fire every day. All your clothes stinks, but if you're hunting the wind the right way, then you're fine anyways. You're up there, you're sweating anyways. It's not really like in the high country, scent is a big deal, but you just got to get the wind right because you, usually by day 5, 6, 7, 8, you smell so bad anyways, it doesn't matter. So you need that stuff. Obviously, a good pair of binos. Trekking poles are extremely handy. If you're hunting high country mule deer, I would say bring a spotting scope. If you're hunting elk, I wouldn't. Because chances are, if you look way, way out there with your binos and you see what looks like a big elk, you can tell whether he's big enough that you want to go try and shoot him or not. So you don't need to you're not looking at a mule deer and trying to decide whether he's 160 or 170 inch mule deer at a mile. You know, it's a lot different.
Right.
And you usually see elk when they're up walking around. You usually see mule deer, you know, in the mornings when they're feeding, but you're also looking for them when they're bedded. So a spotting scope or a set of 15s is very beneficial for finding, locating mule deer. So that's kind of the gist of it, you know. And then obviously you need some sort of rain gear. some sort of insulation layer, some sort of base layer, and then like your main camo. So I have an insulation layer for my legs and an insulation layer for my upper body, but depending on the hunt, I don't take both of them. You know, if I'm doing a hunt in August, the chances of me needing that insulation, that puffy bottom, is not very good. And even in August, I usually don't take my rain bottoms either, because, yeah, while my legs might get wet, I feel that it'll probably warm up enough, or I can light a fire and dry them back out, as opposed to I'd be wet but still warm, you know. But in September, sometimes when it snows, you get wet and then you're cold, so that's why I take a rain top and a rain bottom in September. But in my hunts in August or early September, or if I'm close enough, you know, if I'm 1 or 2 miles from a vehicle, then I won't take it either. You know, if it's just going to take me 2 or 3 hours to get back to get it, then I don't take it either.
Right. That makes sense. Awesome.
Yeah.
Just kind of the opposite of that question. Is there some things, or maybe you can't think of any, but is there anything that you can think of that maybe somebody brings that they don't need to bring?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you just told us some different scenarios and things you may not bring, but I mean, I can tell you from my experience, when I went on my elk hunt, it was backpack, or it was a horse. We rode horses in and had saddlebags. So basically we weren't as limited a weight at all. I brought too many changes of clothes, you know, too many layers, too much food, you know, but it made it an awesome hunt. It made it comfortable, and I was able to change clothes and all that crap. But if you're going in with just your pack, you know, can you think of some stuff or that you may not need?
Yeah, absolutely. So you don't need, like, canned food. You don't need any bottled food. While you may mentally – or bottled water, like, while you may – be mentally thinking to yourself that a can of chili is light, it's not. It's not at all. So you definitely don't need anything like that. You don't need a sweatshirt, a jacket, a windbreak, an insulation layer, and a rain layer. You don't need all those. Okay?
Right.
So I usually bring like a very light layer, so something like a jacket or a sweatshirt. I bring an insulation layer, and then I bring a rain top, and that's it. You don't need a change of socks for every single day. You don't need a change of underwear for every single day. I usually bring 2 or 3 pairs of socks. That way I can wear one, then the next day I can hang that up to dry, obviously, and wear the next one, so that I'm never wearing wet socks every day. That kind of stuff you just don't need. I don't take a pillow. I know a lot of people that do, but I don't, because I take an insulation layer and I use that as my pillow. What else? Oh, you don't need like 7 pots and pans either.
Right.
You know, you buy these kits and they come with the magical 5 pots and 5 lids and 2 plates and blah, 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 blah. You don't need any of that crap. And that's what it is. It's crap. It's weight, and you don't need it. So you can either go with something like a jet boil, and it has its own pot, and you boil the water, dump it into like your mountain house, and you're done. And then you need 1 spork, not a fork and a knife and a spoon, a spork. Okay, so you take a spork, and then you can eat that stuff. Or you can take 2 pots and a foldable cup. So what that does is you have a pot for your cooking, you have a pot for boiling water, and then you have the cup to pour the boiling water into and drink it. That way your pot that has boiling water in it never gets dirty, and you never have to clean it. That's a big plus, because cleaning stuff out there, especially when it's cold, as soon as your pot cools down, it's either cooked on or frozen on, and then it's a pain in the ass to get off.
Right.
So another thing you don't need.
That's something I would have never thought of.
Yeah, another thing you don't need is a whole ton of the butane burners. You don't need that many. It is incredible. Okay. Depending on like a jet boil, for instance, they use almost no fuel because they will boil your water in like a minute and a half. So if you are using something like a Mountain House and you have your water boiling in a minute and a half, you turn it off, you pour your boiling water into your Mountain House, and you're done. So you can get one of the mini even if you're making coffee, you can get one of those mini canisters, and that will last you an entire probably six-day hunt. It's nuts how long those things last.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So there's a few things that you don't need.
Yeah. That's, I mean, a lot of things you said is what I made the mistakes on, you know. I mean, I say mistakes, but we had the capability of bringing them in, so.
Yeah, if I'm taking horses, it's a different story.
You know, we ate good, I'm telling you. I cooked all the meals beforehand and vacuum sealed them, and man, we ate good. I even brought a little bit of alcohol on the trip. Boy. I had a celebration drink.
There you go. Why not?
I keep saying it's a mistake, but I guess just under those circumstances, that's what I could do. But my next trip won't have that capability.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing that you don't need to bring is you don't need to bring two backpacks.
Okay.
Never. Like, you're going, especially if you're backpack hunting. You know, obviously that's what we're talking about. If you're going in there to hunt, you're going to drop off your camp. You're going to go hunt for the day. Sometimes you have your camp on your back. Take your frame pack with you, because if you walk 2 miles in there farther and you shoot something, you don't want to have to go back to camp to get your frame pack and then back out there to get the animal. Don't take a little day pack. You don't need all that crap. You don't need it. Compress your your frame pack so that it's super sleek. Go out there, go kill something, load it in your frame pack, take it back to camp.
Makes sense.
Don't take a day pack. Unless you're just day hunting, even then, use that day pack. Use your frame pack as a day pack. Trust me, the one time you get out there and you have to pack out elk quarters in something that is not a frame pack, I've done it. It sucks.
That's funny. That makes sense, though. Shoot. Well, man, I think we answered a lot of questions. We covered a lot of ground. I think it helps some people. I hope it helps some people. You know, this is all questions that I've either asked you or wanted to ask you. And so I still have more coming. We still got several months till we go hunting. So I should keep those written down. So maybe we can do those on a future podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Well, sweet, man.
Anyway, that's all I got with this, buddy.
Cool. I had a blast. Awesome. I think we covered some stuff to help some people, so that's awesome.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear, and it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevated with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.